Coming up next on This Week in Radio Tech, we're talking with Hank Landsberg. Now, we had him on a couple of months ago. We didn't get time to talk about some technology, about transient voltage surge suppression, TVSS, and the right way to handle it, because there's a lot of wrong ways to handle it. Plus, an interesting UPS device, and what is popular for doing broadcasting from home these days. That's coming up next on TWRT. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by Max Connect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host, and I'm here in my usual spot. Yes, quarantined. Well, not quarantined, but, you know, at home, sheltering in place here at Harnack House in Nashville, Tennessee. It's also the home of the Telos Alliance studio in Nashville, Tennessee. So I'm surrounded by Telos Alliance gear and given an hour and a half off on Thursdays to do This Week in Radio Tech. Bring it to you, my engineer friends, as a service and a labor of love. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Also here as a labor of love, he gets a couple shekels, but it's not at all what he's worth. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Chris Tobin from New York City. Hey, Chris.
Hello. Yes, it's a wonderful day here in the city. I must say the weather's in good shape. Sunshine, well, just peeking behind the clouds, but we're good. How are you holding up there in the bunker?
I'm good. I haven't been out today. I've been in the bunker all day long. Let's see. My wife, our daughter is staying with us. She had to do some accounting at the foundation where she works and my wife works. Had to write some checks, you know, people wanting their money. So she ran over there. But we've been keeping the floors clean, keeping the hands washed. Nothing gets in or out except the dog. The dog goes out frequently. I don't think they're carriers, but I don't know. Anyway.
There actually was a report, I think, of one or two dogs somewhere in Asia that may have contracted it, but I haven't heard more.
Well, we'd rather him do his business outside than inside. So
this is true.
How about now? Are you? I guess you're not taking public transportation at this point, are you?
Only on occasion.
Yeah,
and I've the subway. It's the best it's smelled in decades. the disinfectant trains have been great. But the trick is, you don't touch anything. You stay standing. Don't sit down, because you don't want anybody above you or near you. And by standing, you stand by the ends of the train, you know, the doors where the air conditioning is constantly changing the air. So that's what I've been doing. Yeah. And it seems to work very well. And if you have to move around, you can get a quick exit that way. You can move to another car very quickly as well. So it works out. But yeah, I've been walking to the transmitter site from my apartment every day. So it's about a mile each way, so 2 miles a day. It's a nice walk through empty streets. The only thing you see is a police officer on a horse and a couple of ambulances going by, and that's about it. You know, it's,
wow.
It reminds me of the day after 9/11. That's what it reminds me of.
Wow. Well, I keep hearing over and over from people who are smart, and you know, my wife is in the medical field. She has personal friends, people on her board of directors who have tested positive, and one's a pediatric surgeon. So these people are all sheltering in place and taking lots of precautions. You know, most of us now know somebody who has contracted coronavirus, or we know somebody who knows somebody who has, certainly. A few people know somebody either personally or by reputation, someone who has died from coronavirus. So, you know, we're all taking it pretty seriously. And it remains to be seen how it'll work out. But I keep hearing that, you know, the next 2 weeks, you know, until the middle of April, news will be kind of worse every day. And then by then, it should really start to ramp back down. We'll still have more cases, but the number, the delta every day, will get smaller and smaller, supposedly. We'll be here doing This Week in Radio Tech. I mean, our producer, Suncast, is he's sheltered in place, and Chris and I both are. So the GFQ network is safe and secure in New York City. So we'll be here, and we'll be chatting, and you know, hopefully we'll be doing a good service to bring people in. You know, Chris, we had pretty good success with our show a couple weeks ago where we brought in a number of engineers on a we did it by a Zoom call, and then Suncast aired that, and we're like to see if we can do that again, and maybe even do that live instead of pre-recorded. That way we can, it's good to have interaction. In fact, Chris, our director of sales at the TELUS Alliance, said yesterday, look, guys, we're going to have our usual sales meeting on Friday morning. It is optional, if you're feeling under the weather, if you're, whatever issue may be, I've got a few things to talk about, but it's optional. And you know what? People are replying with, no, man, we want to talk. We want to have conversation with the people that we work with. What are things like over at your radio station there in Jersey?
At our place, it's been great. I mean, I got everybody off site about 2 weeks earlier than everybody else started making it mandatory. So we got cooking real fast with off-site administration, and the air staff is now off-site as of 2 days ago. So we're doing well there. And we've been doing video conferencing for a while now, and it's working out nicely, and a lot of folks are enjoying it because there's nothing like nonverbal communication through the visual. That's key. You can text all you like, and you don't get the expression. You don't understand what the words have no substance to them, really. They're just letters. But if I'm talking to you and you're looking at my face when I say, you are an idiot, or you did a great job, it has a very different connotation than simply in text, hey, great work. And I think that's what's making the difference, and people are starting to discover that with the visual conferencing. And if you're a sales department or an engagement organization where you need to deal with people on a regular basis, definitely do the video conferencing approach to keep your staff up and feeling good, making things happen. And it makes you think out of the box. That's the one thing that makes me laugh with people. It's like, oh, that's a great idea. It's like, no, it's really simple. You've just been too busy working on this, using this device to make your life simpler when it's really not. So think about it. Before this, how did you communicate in business? How'd you have a good business day, good week in business? Oh, that's right. You networked, and you used to meet your customers and talk to them. If not by phone, by in person, because you did that trip. You were driving. I'm passing through your town. You might have to get together for lunch on Thursday. Yeah, let's do it. Nobody does that anymore because apparently it's too expensive. You can't afford it. So let's just do an email. And they can't figure out why sales are down. I'm just saying, I'm watching a lot of stuff at our station. We have always engaged people. All of our underwriters, all of our producers, we talk to the folks that give us the money to help us keep things moving. So we do very little of the email. Hey, I'm going to send you an email. No, we're actually in people's faces and talking, having a conversation. Most of the time it's at night at the clubs because that's the stuff we're doing with music. But it works. And 40 years of doing what we do, it's proof. But I don't know why a lot of the folks think it's arcane or draconian or, well, that's your father's way of doing business. Nah, there's some truth to it. And I'm sure, you know, even your organization, you guys do a lot of face-to-face stuff, and that makes a big difference.
We do. We come together. And of course, we usually come together at NAB shows, but we also get together at the company headquarters in Cleveland. We bring people over from Europe. We have people, the TELUS Alliance is worldwide. In fact, the first notion that there might be a problem is when travel from China was shut down. We had a big meeting in Cleveland in February, and our number one guy in China couldn't come over, Daniel Wang. I mean, Daniel's a great guy. We'd love to see him. And we were all a little miffed that, hey, well, they shut down travel from China. It turns out good thing that they did. But so, Chris, let me tell you about today's show, what we're going to be doing, and our audience as well, you engineers listening in the audience. So today, the Nashville SBE chapter, it's chapter number 103. We're doing those guidelines, can't even go eat at our usual Piccadilly cafeteria and do our meeting there. So we decided let's have a virtual meeting and let's invite somebody. And we had Hank Landsberg of Henry Engineering on this show back a couple months ago or so. And we talked about a lot of things. And one thing very important we didn't get to was the technology that Hank and his company have for transient voltage surge suppression. And it's different. It's different than your standard MOV technology that's out there. And I wanted to give Hank a chance to explain it. I said, well, tell you what, Hank, why don't you explain that technology to our SBE group? Explain why MOVs alone are not really a great solution. And they do some things, but they also wear out over time, and why they don't always protect your equipment. So whereas your product does, you've got a technology that fills this gap and that we'll get to. So I said, come talk to our SBE meeting virtually, right? and we'll record that. And it's kind of important, I think. So we'll play that as a segment on TWRT. And then Hank has another product that is not going to be shipping until a couple more weeks. And so that's I think it solves a great problem. I mean, it solves a problem that I've wondered how we're going to solve without lashing something up. And that's what so many of Henry Engineering's products are. It's stuff that you could build yourself, but I'm so glad that somebody else does and does it well. So that's coming up. And then the third thing we're talking to Hank about is in this time of people sheltering in place, working from home, and air talent being at home, I asked him, is there any of one of your products that seems to be flying off the shelves now that people are working from home? He said, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a product you know about, and people are using these things at home because it fits the workflow that we're used to. So, Chris, that's what we have to look forward to coming up right after our first sponsor announcement. We're going to be talking with Hank, or Hank's going to be talking to us about transient voltage surge suppression and why MOVs alone are not a good solution. And he's got a better solution to the whole thing. So that's what's coming up. Chris, hey, in these days when people are sheltering in place at home, this can be really helpful. You want to put callers on the air, and maybe you don't have a phone system that you can remote control from home. And you don't certainly have phone lines at your own house to take one call after another. Well, guess what? This can help you do it. It's the Bluetooth audio gadget from my friends at Angry Audio. AngryAudio.com is the website, and the Bluetooth gadget will connect right with your Bluetooth on your cell phone. You can use your cell phone to make phone calls. And by the way, you don't have to give out your own cell phone number. You could, for example, get, let's say, a Vonage phone number or some other SIP service. Install the SIP application on your cell phone, and whatever you do. And hey, you can even do Skype. Anything where you've got audio on your cell phone, you can redirect that audio into the Bluetooth audio gadget. You get terrific audio quality with this. And it, you know what? If your cell phone has, unlike my iPhone, if your cell phone still has a headphone mic jack on it, you know, the tip ring ring sleeve jack, well, you can plug that in as well. It's got a hole for that right here. If you don't want to use the Bluetooth, this will clean things up and get the impedance right, just right to go back and forth. So check this thing out. This is the Bluetooth audio gadget from Angry Audio. Great way to put callers on the air. And, man, you can even do that from home. You might even be able to forward your phone calls from the radio station, onto, let's say, a Vonage account or some throwaway account. You don't have to give out your personal phone number. There's ways around this, but check it out. You get professional inputs and outputs, mix minus going back in. It's designed exactly right. AC power supply contained internally, and, famous Angry Audio quality. Check it out. All right. That is from Bluetooth Audio. Thanks a lot to Angry Audio for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Our speaker today is a guy named Hank Landsberg, and you probably know him better by the name of his company, and that's Henry Engineering. And Henry Engineering, oh my goodness, I swear, Hank and me and I must have started engineering at about the same time. Well, Hank started engineering a little earlier, but then he moved into making Henry Engineering, and I think that's about the time that I started in this business as engineering, because I swear from day one, me crawling around in engineer diapers, so to speak, I was became quickly familiar with the products that Hank makes. And, you know, a lot of what the products that Hank makes, we often call them little blue boxes. They do essential things around your broadcast facility. But there are some interesting ideas and technologies that Hank is putting to use in some newer products. And that's what he's here to talk about. So let me unmute Hank, if he's not already. Oh, he's already unmuted. Let me introduce to you my friend, and he should be yours too, Hank Landsberg. Hank, welcome.
Thanks
in.
Thanks very much. Thanks very much for asking me to be on this morning. Hello to everybody. Hope everybody is doing well and staying healthy and stay 6 feet away from your screen, you know. Anyway, we're going to talk about, I think, three gadgets this morning, and hopefully it won't be too sales pitchy. I'll try to make it more educational and how it all works and what problems it solves and take that kind of an approach. And anyway, so we'll start with something that's really not a Henry Engineering product per se, our sort of sister company is called Sign Control, S-I-N-E, as in sine wave. And the sign control side of things makes the power clamp industrial strength surge suppressors that are very often used up at transmitter sites. So the reason we're going to talk about that is so I can explain how they work and how they're a little bit different from some other things that are on the market that, that do similar things. And also to show you the new version, which gives you a little bit more bang for your buck. Here's the old one. Ugh. You've probably seen these at the NAB show when I've brought them. Big steel box. Gets rid of surges and spikes on your AC power line that's feeding your transmitter. And here's the new one. New and improved, as they say. Smaller, lighter, has more capacity, and costs less money. So that's kind of a win-win all around. So before I open the thing up and show it to you, let me just explain a little bit about how these things work, not only ours, but everybody's. Most surge suppressors, pretty much all of them, that are installed in parallel with your AC line, they use MOVs, metal oxide varistors. And you can think of an MOV as, well, it would be nice if it was a peak limiter, but it's not. If you look at what an MOV does, is it it's a circuit component that begins to conduct when the voltage reaches a certain threshold. And it would be really great if they worked like a peak limiter, where they would not conduct until they hit a certain threshold, and then they would conduct. That would be wonderful. But they don't work like a peak limiter. In reality, an MOV operates more like a compressor with sort of a soft knee, a soft compression curve. It doesn't conduct when there's no voltage, and then as the voltage increases, it begins to conduct, and it conducts a little more and a little more and a little more, but there's no real well-defined transition point from when it's off versus when it's on. And this makes things really tricky when you try to use them to chop off spikes and surges off of a power line. So if we look over here on my very unsophisticated drawing, let's say this is, we're looking at the voltage level of your incoming AC. And this is 0 volts, and let's say this is the normal voltage. So in the real world, it would be great if you could simply establish a threshold just a little bit above normal and say, well, anything that goes above normal voltage, we're going to chop it off and shunt it to ground. Well, that's not easy to do when you're dealing with a compressor with a soft knee. And here are the two ways you can attempt to do this, but each one has a trade-off. You can set your MOV threshold kind of low, so it's just above normal voltage. But the problem with that is when you set the threshold low enough so that it starts to attenuate higher voltage spikes, the reality is, even when you don't have any spikes and you just have normal voltage, the MOV is going to be conducting just a little bit all the time. And that generates heat, just like a resistor. And the heat causes the MOV material to burn away. And gradually, over time, this threshold will begin to rise. And rise and rise. And pretty soon the MOV is pretty much all disintegrated and there's nothing left of it and it's not doing anything anymore. So that doesn't work. So instead, let's just put the MOV threshold way up here so that with normal voltage, it's not conducting. Well, that's good because it doesn't cause the MOV to disintegrate and degrade. But then you have this big gap between normal voltage and where you want it to start attenuating spikes. And this gap can be several hundred volts. And spikes and surges, they kind of come in two flavors. There's the lower voltage spikes and surges that come across the grid, usually from other equipment, other users on the grid. And they're only a few hundred volts above normal, but they happen all the time, hundreds and hundreds of times every day. And then you have really high voltage stuff that is caused by lightning and things like that, and that's way up off the charts. But the issue is, with this soft compression curve, if you use just MOVs, if you want those things to last more than 6 months, you have to set their threshold so far above normal line voltage that lower voltage spikes of a few hundred to maybe up to maybe 1,000 volts, they're going to get through. And those things cause damage, especially when everybody's using solid-state transmitters, which have switching power supplies. I'm sure you guys know that switching power supplies are not very tolerant of spikes and surges. So what do we do here? Well, what we do in power clamp is we put our MOV threshold way up here so that it doesn't degrade over time. And then we have a second technology that fills in this gap and takes care of the lower level spikes and surges. So what we really have are two independent circuits. MOVs are one of them, and then a second secret sauce, which is proprietary, that fills in this gap. So that second circuit, it has its clamping level or its threshold just above normal voltage. So when you put these two technologies together, you get the best of both worlds. You have the secondary circuit that only allows spikes to come in maybe 5-10 volts above the top of the sine wave. And so that circuit takes care of the low-level stuff. And then if you do get a big whopper of a hit, then the MOVs kick in, and they take the lion's share of the really high-voltage stuff. So that's how power clamp works. That's why we call it a hybrid device, because it's a hybrid of two separate technologies. Both are operating against ground. So spikes and surges, whether they're high or low level, they both get shunted to ground. The device is installed in parallel with your AC power service. So it's not in series with the load, which is good because, one, you don't have to match the load, and two, if the suppressor overloads and it blows its own fuse, it doesn't shut off power to your transmitter. So that's always good. So anyway, that's how power clamp works in a nutshell. And this is what the new one looks like. I think you have a photo, if you can pop in the photo. Oh, there we go. There we go. Oh, great. Okay, perfect. And you can see this is a three-phase unit. So you can see the inputs for the three phases, and there's three fuses there. If you look right below the middle of each fuse, you'll see an LED. If the fuse blows, that LED will light up. And since the front cover is clear, you can see it easily. To the left of the fuses is that box there. That's the secondary attenuation network. That's the thing that takes up the that's the thing that soaks up the low level voltage spikes. And then the MOVs are above that. You can see them in a row there. And those are the things that soak up the really high voltage stuff. Way at the top of the box, the three white things, those are little relays. You can order these things with those relays, and what happens there is the relays simply open up if any of the fuses blow, and gives you a contact closure that you can interface to your transmitter remote control, so that if you do have a fuse blowout from an overload, it'll give you a closure that will send you that status report via your transmitter remote control, and that way you'll know that you need to change the fuse the next time you come up to the transmitter. So that's what the new Series 200 looks like, and it's rated at 200,000 surge amps per phase. The older unit that I showed you a few minutes ago, the big gray box, those were typically rated at 150,000 surge amps per phase. So this has more capacity by about 33%, and it costs less money because we're using newer manufacturing technology and so on. Instead of a steel enclosure, we're using this NEMA rated polycarbonate enclosure, which is actually outdoor rated, and it just makes it easier and less expensive for us to produce the product, so we're able to reduce the price. So anyway, that's the new and improved Power Clamp Series 200, and we make them for single phase, three phase Y. If you need three phase Delta, we have to go back to the older style. Delta is very much the exception to the rule these days. Most three-phase power is Y. But you just order for whichever voltage you need, whether it's 120.208 or 277.480, and we build them to order, and delivery time's about a week. So anyway, that's the lowdown on the new Power Clamp Series 200, and now you know a little bit how it works.
Hank, we certainly can entertain some questions, and I've got a couple of my own, so I'm not bashful. I'll go ahead and start. I just find it mind-boggling that a box that is not massive can handle, you've mentioned some huge figure in terms of shunting overvoltage to ground.
Right.
What, help me with my mental disconnect between...
How does that work?
How does that work?
200,000 surge amps. Well, the key word there is surge amps, not continuous. A typical lightning hit is a fraction of a microsecond in pulse width. So even though the current is astronomical and the voltage is astronomical, the time is very, very short. So that's why. These devices, as I said, they work against ground. They're not voltage regulators. If you have a condition where your line voltage suddenly goes up and it stays up, well, there's no way in the world anything can shunt infinite amounts of current to ground. So that's why we have fuses in these things. If it's going to overload, it'll just pop its own fuse. And then in most cases, you just replace the fuse and you're good to go. But to answer your question, it's a very, very short time interval. And the higher the voltage, the higher voltage spikes tend to come from either lightning or other atmospheric issues. And those tend to be really, really short time intervals, you know, down in the microsecond range. The lower level spikes, you know, in this area tend to be longer, but they're much lower voltage, only a couple of hundred volts, not tens of thousands. So that's how it works.
What do you have in terms of success stories where users have felt like, yeah, that definitely saved our bacon at the transmitter site that time or at the studio?
We got a bunch of them on the website. I'll give you a little more background. How in the world did a company that makes audio stuff get into this? You know, this is a million miles away from audio. Many years ago, I think back in the 70s or the 80s, there was a commercial on TV for Remington shavers. And the guy came on saying, "Hi, my name is whatever his name was, and I bought a Remington shaver, and I was so impressed with it, I bought the company." Victor Kayam, I think, was the guy's name. Remember that? Well, I don't know if any of you guys are know any of the LA-based engineers, but Tom Koza is one of them, and he is a very good friend of mine. And he had a particular problem with a transmitter that he was maintaining that was doing just all kinds of weird stuff, throwing breakers and just doing everything weird you can think of. And they finally, as a last resort, put one of these sign control surge suppressors on the line. They had used some other ones in the past, but it didn't really do anything. They put one of these surge suppressors on the line after hearing about it at an SBE meeting, and this was back in probably the early 80s. And it cured the problem. And he told me about it, and then he kind of pestered me for a few years, and they said, "You ought to call this company because they have a really great product, but they're not marketing it to the broadcast industry." The product was created originally out of a request from the Navy. The Navy was having a hard time keeping computers working on their bombing test ranges. And the bombs were evidently creating an EMP that was spiking the power and making the computers go down or whatever. So to make a long story short, the product was developed for that. And Tom found out about it. He tried it, worked great. He called me. As it turned out, the guy who founded the company wanted to retire. So to make a long story short, I ended up sort of absorbing his product line. So that's how I got into this whole thing. But yeah, we've got dozens and dozens of testimonials from stations that have solved their transmitter blowing up problems by putting one of these things in.
I've got just one more question. I believe you make these in a couple of different sizes. How do I know which size that my facility, I don't want to spend too much, but I don't want to spend too little either.
Right. Basically, it has nothing to do with the transmitter power. It has more to do with where you're located. If you're in Southern California, where we don't have very much lightning, you could probably get away with a smaller unit. We make a small version of this. This is the series, the 200. We make a smaller version called the series 80, which is 80 kiloamps per phase. And for areas that don't get much lightning, the 80 would probably work. If you're in Texas, you better put in the big one because, you know, lots of lightning anywhere in the east or in the south, southeast part of the country. If you're in a high lightning area, go for the big unit. The price difference is not that much, but you get a lot more. You'll sleep better at night. it's the proverbial ounce of prevention, you know. What's it cost to replace the switching power supply in a transmitter these days? A couple of $1,000, I would imagine. So there you go.
That was Hank Landsberg. We interviewed him today, and he made a presentation to the Nashville SBE meeting. And I think you're going to be seeing a lot more of distance presentations like that. So I hope that answered your questions. And it certainly did mine about why his power clamp product is different than just the regular MOV style products. Chris Tobin, I don't have a whole lot of experience with surge suppressors. I've put a few of them at various transmitter sites. Pretty much invariably, they've gotten blown up, and some have gotten replaced and some haven't. Of course, if they haven't, well, that's asking for trouble because, you know, if they got blown up, they did their job. What's your own experience with this kind of device?
I've used transit suppressors over the years in some large boxes and great panels. And, it's a stopgap. It helps. And I've seen many MOVs exploded inside a case. It's an interesting-looking image, but Hank's right. I did some research years and years ago when I was attending some IEEE power systems symposiums, not broadcasts, it's their utility power group. And it was fascinating, some of the things they were talking about, how they manage suppressing power, surges and the different types. As Hank pointed out, there's lows, the high locations in the country, all kinds of conditions. So I started looking around. I found a few companies over the years that had stuff, and Sign was one of them. What's funny is Hank pointed out, I always tell this to everyone, you're sharing electricity with other people, and with the new switching supplies, the cheaper quality supplies actually create noise that goes back onto the power line. So if you're at a facility where you're having like all these weird computer anomalies or automation systems that are computer-based, I'll call them microprocessor-based, and you can't understand what's going on, check your power. I worked at a place, a facility, broadcast facility, quite large, was experiencing all kinds of strange things in different rooms with computer equipment, or also a broadcast equipment that was microprocessor-based. And we tracked it down to a faulty transformer, a step-down transformer in the utility room, the electrical. It was arcing, small little arcs just creating. And you look at the waveform. We were looking at the AC wave in the parts of the building, and you're like, what's that little tick mark? I don't know. But it's not here in this studio area. It's not on this branch circuit. Uh-oh. And then we got the electricians in. They start tracing it out. They go, well, it looks like your high voltage coming in, being stepped down. Somewhere in here is a problem. And that's what it was. Meanwhile, we spent so much time with the manufacturer of the equipment going, there's something wrong with your box, something wrong with the box, what's going on? It turned out to be nothing like that at all because it was a switching supply. Now, if it was a brute force, bridge rectifier, odds are we'd probably still be running with it and not having an issue. And the transformer's shorting out, burning, creating flames, and our equipment still runs because it sees a voltage. But those 50-pound power supplies are not around anymore.
It's worthwhile stating that a switch mode power supply works. They're lightweight. They're less expensive than a linear supply, but they also work because they're making some assumptions. And one of those assumptions is that the power coming in is good. And the assumption is that you won't mind if that switch mode power supply puts some interesting stresses and adds some garbage back to the rest of your system, because it's going to do that as part of the way that it works. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. Years ago, I was building repeater sites for people, amateur operators and other types of two-way radios. And a lot of times, sites I go to up on mountaintops or places that are kind of remote. And I say, you know what? I know the manufacturer, the box you bought has this nice switching power supply in it. I tell you what, how about we get this company's product, which is a brute force version, extra 10% or 20% overhead, and let's go with that. And they were like, well, why? Because the power up at the hill, the mountain, was kind of dirty at times, and also cups up and down because of the weather conditions and going through the trees to get power lines, they tend to get bumped around. And I remember about 2 years ago visiting a friend of mine at one of the sites. He goes, hey, do you remember this box? I'm like, yeah, it still works. But we had to replace these two other repeaters. They blew up. Really? Switching supply, brute force supply. So I know it's anecdotal, but there is something to be said for it. So as Hank pointed out, you get the Series 80 for areas that are not going to have lightning strikes that are a regular place, or you go for the higher Series 200 in, say, Florida, where they test these things for lightning conditions.
Yeah.
So, that's how you have to look at it. If you have transmitter sites up on top of a mountain, you might want to look for the higher power one just because. So, these are the things, application, that's what it is.
So, Chris, we've been talking about transient voltage surge suppression and the Hank's Power Clamp product and why it's different than just the plain MOV products. Coming up next, Hank presented us an idea for something. And I've thought about this before. I didn't have the elegant idea that Hank did. I always had a much rougher idea. But there is a problem that engineers have when dealing with the smaller UPSs. By smaller, I don't necessarily mean just the individual computer size. I just mean not the Liebert style that's runs your whole facility, or at least runs your rack room or your tech floor. I'm talking about the rack mount size UPSs, or like the one I have down here next to me now. It could be rack mounted, but it's a freestanding one. And there's a very solvable problem with those that'll make your life a lot easier, because we're in the 24/7, 365 broadcast business. We don't want anything to go down ever, especially not a whole rack of stuff. And UPSs always present that possibility, and sometimes that eventuality. So Hank has an interesting solution to that. You know, Hank is, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, and that's what drives Hank Landsberg. So that's coming up. So stand by for that. You're watching This Week in Radio Tech, episode number 487. I'm Kirk Harnack, along with Chris Tobin. Glad that you're here. Our show is brought to you in part by Broadcasters General Store in Ocala, Florida. It really doesn't matter where they are. Their phone number works. They're there taking your phone calls at 352-622-7700. And one of the cool products that they have that's really found a niche right now, you might need one or two or 10 of these, is the Broadcast Tools ProMix 4. Now, you've heard me talk about this before. It is a simple, effective broadcast quality mixer. Now look how simple it is. You know, when you take some of your air talent, whether you're in television or radio, you take some of your air talent, you put them at home, and they have a whole new environment. And you know, their brains aren't quite wired the way we are as engineers. And we as engineers aren't wired the way their brains are. You need to give people a simple user interface that just works. And it presents them with something simple like an LED VU meter. Easy to see, easy to know when they're blowing the level out too high or hitting it way too low. And look at the on-off buttons on this little ProMix 4 mixer. Simple one-touch on, one-touch off buttons. Simple knobs with even a display to show them, you know, to show you this is higher, this is lower. Even a USB input so they can play audio from their computer onto the mix it into the audio here. There's a master program output. There's an IFB volume control as well as a monitor volume control and headphone volume controls. This is really the cat's meow for getting people to work from home effectively, and make sure they're not going to mess up. They're not going to blow their live spot because they didn't have, you know, the right button pushed. It also has, full duplex talkback capability, an on-air tally warning light relay output. So if you want to wire this up to an on-air light, even if it's just a floor lamp, you know, hey kids, when this light's on, I'm on the air. It's got that built in. Remote channel control and status via terminal block connectors. It can be combined with other ProMix 4 or ProMix 1 units and the ProMix Hub 6 and standard Cat 5 cables. So it's easy to expand this with Cat 5 cables. Just plug them in. And it can drive the Broadcast Tools multiple AHR 1 plus headphone system. So if you have four people in the studio, now they got to be 6 feet apart, but if you have them in there, you could give them all good headphones, as well as, of course, getting their mics all plugged into to this unit. It's got a mix minus output too. So you can actually, let's say you couple that with the aforementioned Angry Audio Bluetooth audio gadget, and you can take phone calls with this box. This is really can be what you need. It is an awesome little box. It's mono, but hey, that's what you need at home. You're probably, you know, playing audio, playing songs if you're doing that, from the radio station. This gives you your complete mix down and mix minus. IFB, if you got to talk back to somebody, it's really cool. It's the Broadcast Tools ProMix 4. Now, I got to tell you, for everything you need to broadcast from home, you need to talk to the folks at Broadcasters General Store. They have the ProMix 4. They have codecs. They have microphones and headphones. All the things you need to broadcast from home. And a lot of that is going on right now. And I think more will happen in the future. Check it out from Broadcasters General Store at bgs.cc. So one of the interesting problems that confronts engineers, is the whole idea of a backup power supply, the UPS, right? And some broadcasters, some facilities are, I guess, fortunate enough to have, you know, the whole house kind of UPS, the huge Liebert system sitting in the back room that can power everything for a little while. Most of us, though, are stuck with using much smaller UPSs, the kind that, well, hopefully it's not the single kind that just runs a computer for 5 minutes, but we have something typically mounted in the bottom of each equipment rack that can power everything in the rack for anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes, maybe up to 15 or 20 minutes, depending on the size. And these are off the shelf and they're kind of heavy and you do have to replace the batteries every now and then. But they also present a problem in that they're not the most expensive things in the world and they fail. And when the UPS fails, sure, some equipment in your rack may have dual power supplies, but probably most of it does not. And if there's dual power supplies, you can run two power rails up the side of the inside of the rack. One's commercial power and one's on the UPS. But this, there's a problem here, and it even caused me a problem. I'll take a minute to tell you. I was in American Samoa at my radio stations, and I'd been there for 10 days. I was getting ready to leave, and we were on our way. Somebody was driving us out to the airport. It's a 30-minute drive through narrow two-lane roads along the side of the ocean. It's very picturesque, but it's a lot of driving. And the station went off the air. We thought, oh my God, what's wrong? If this is a problem, we're going to miss our flight back home, and the next one's not for 4 days. What are we going to do? So we decided to turn around, go back to the studio. And we pretty well, the carrier was still on the air at the transmitter up on Mount Alava. So we figured the problem was probably the studio. So we hightailed it back to the studio. And what did we find? The UPS in the equipment rack was dead. And all we had to do was move the power plugs so that the UPS was no longer part of the circuit. But and then we knew we thought we were going to be late getting back to the airport. We didn't want to be there another 4 days, although it's not a bad place to be for 4 days. So our manager called the local police, who, by the way, don't carry firearms because it's American Samoa, and they wear a lava, not pants. They basically wear a skirt with a police uniform. Anyway, we got a police escort to the airport. That was pretty exciting. And we made it in time to make the flight. But man, were we honked off at our UPS. So Hank Landsberg thought about this. This is not for huge, whole facility solutions. This is for so many typical solutions. And Hank, maybe I've introed it too much. You take it from here. Tell us about your product.
Okay. Yeah, as Kirk said, the problem with a UPS is it's great as long as it works, but if the thing fails, it takes down your whole rack. And even if you want to do preventive maintenance, like replace the batteries before they go out, if the UPS is in series with your load, with your rack full of gear, in order to replace the batteries, you have to take the thing out. And now the rack goes down. So here's the solution. Truly low tech, but it solves the problem. This is a new product called Backups, Back UPS. And there we go. Now we're going to get a picture of it. And what this does is monitors the output of your UPS, and if it senses a problem with the voltage going away, dipping down, or glitching, or anything weird like that, it will bypass the UPS, so your rack full of gear stays on the air, and since it is now bypassed, you can take the UPS offline, take it back in the shop, and put in new batteries or fix it or replace it or whatever you got to do. Let's see. Kirk is trying to figure out how to get the picture up. Is it there yet? Well, now you're back up. This worked when we tested it, which is why it's not working now. We used up all of our good karma on the test, and so... Oh, there we go. Okay. So as you can see, the backups device, that's the blue square there, has two line inputs for AC power. One of them gets plugged directly into an outlet. That's the bottom one. The upper one plugs into the output of your UPS, which is in turn plugged into the outlet also. And the backups has a relay in there, which is rated at 15 amps. And you take the output of the backups device and feed it into your load, your rack full of gear. And if the backups unit senses that there's a problem with the UPS, it bypasses it and powers your rack off of the direct line. So the UPS is completely out of the circuit. Now, one of the cool things that we put in here, if you can go to the picture of the front of the unit, there we go. Okay. Now, as it turns out, sometimes when a UPS fails, the output just quits and it just goes away. But there's evidently other failure modes. When the batteries start to get weak, it gets flaky. The UPS will come up, it'll stay up for a while, and then it may drop off. And then it may come back on for 5 minutes and drop off again. And then it may come back up for a couple of minutes and drop off again. So it becomes, the output becomes unstable. It comes off and on and off and on. And of course, this is just going to wreak havoc with whatever gear you're powering. So as you can see, we have two inputs up on top. Input from the UPS and a direct input from the line. And there's a delay time thing with a bunch of dip switches. So there's a delay timer in this device so that when the UPS powers up, every time the UPS powers up, the backups device waits for a delay time period. It can be anywhere from 10 seconds out to 15 minutes. And the backups unit monitors the output of the UPS during that delay interval. And only if it comes up and it remains at full voltage for that delay interval, then it switches the UPS back in the circuit. If it senses that the UPS drops off, then it will not put it back in circuit. And when the UPS comes back up, it restarts that delay time. So this prevents the UPS from getting switched back in line if its output is not stable. In the middle, there's a mode switch. It's a three-position switch. If the switch is all the way to the right, the way you see it, that means it's in automatic delay mode with that delay timer active. If it's in the middle, that's a manual bypass mode. If you need to manually bypass the UPS to change batteries or whatever, you can do that. You can physically remove it, take it back in the shop, do whatever you got to do, and it keeps your line, keeps your rack full of gear powered up with direct line power. And the left switch position is automatic. It works the same way as delay, except that it doesn't have the delay feature. It switches the UPS back in circuit as soon as it comes up without that delay. And then there's LEDs and so forth down there that tell you what it's doing. And then there's that green remote connector. That gives you a way of being notified remotely with a DC voltage. It'll tell you when the UPS is on or when it's not. So you can interface that to, a remote LED or remote input on your transmitter or remote control or whatever. The other important feature that's on that remote connector is the ability to force it into a bypass mode. If you install this like up at a transmitter site and things start getting weird up there and you want to take the UPS out of the circuit just to check it or to see if it's causing you problems or whatever, you can, using a GPI input, you can force the backups unit to bypass the unit, bypass the UPS entirely. So that's just another function that you can operate remotely. There we go. So you've seen what it looks like. I have one here I can power up just for fun. So I think you can see that. When we turn it on, the delay timer starts flashing, which means that it's going through the delay cycle. And when it's finished with the delay, then the green light comes on and tells you the UPS is active. And if something happens, like there's a little power glitch or something, the UPS gets flaky and its output drops off for, let's say, a tenth of a second or something, it drops off again. Now it goes back into bypass mode. The timing circuit starts again, goes through its timing interval. And when it's happy that it's working okay, then it comes back on. And you can adjust that timing interval out to 15 minutes. It's pretty simple. It's in this plastic box that's not very big. You can mount it on the inside of the rack wherever you need. One other interesting feature is people have asked me how long of a power interruption does it take before the unit drops the UPS out of the circuit and goes to direct line power. There are actually two modes. There's slow and fast. Most of the time you just leave it on slow. It will switch the UPS into bypass mode if it detects an interruption of maybe 100 milliseconds, about a tenth of a second. If you suspect that your UPS is glitchy or is having issues with very short-term power dropouts, we have what we call the fast response mode, and that is selected by one of the other little dip switches. When it's in fast response mode, it'll go into bypass with a power dropout in the vicinity of about 10 milliseconds. So it's very quick. So that's our other new product. Even though it's a power product, it's going to be marketed as a Henry Engineering product, not Sign Control. And we're starting production on these, the end of this month. Our production facility is shut down because of the Corona thing for another couple of weeks, but then we'll be ramping up and getting these things into production. So that's the new backups, UPS backup thing, the UPS bypasser thing.
Well, Chris, what do you think about that? That would have saved my bacon a few times, so I can't wait for those to come out. They're going to be about $250 list price.
Oh, I think they're great. I can see many applications for that. Several studio setups I've done. Home studio units would be great for home stuff. I've helped install a few of those small units and have gotten calls. And I'm like, oh, that's a problem. And it starts beeping, time for new battery. It's like, now what do we do? It comes in handy. It's a good product. I think I could definitely see use for that.
When you got a rack full of gear that you know, maybe keeping several radio stations on the air, and they're all plugged into the UPS, and you didn't think, oh, gosh, what if the UPS dies? Yeah.
Well, yeah. No. I mean, you can have like individual racks protected by this on one, say, if you have two sets of, power strips. And for some reason, one strip is on a main UPS for the plant, and the other strip is used for utility. You say, you know, it's our utility strip. It's not mission critical. You could put this on the utility strip and now have a somewhat protected circuit in conjunction with your bigger unit, like we'll call it the Liebert system, you know. There's several ways. I've been to many plants where people can only have enough load on the UPS for one power strip in the rack, but yet they have two strips. They have to
some facilities try to only buy gear that has two power supplies, but so much radio gear has one power supply. You can't outfit the entire broadcast facility with everything with two power supplies. If you have two power supplies, then you can plug one into, you know, shore power, UPS, commercial power, and one into the UPS power. But this is for facilities where you don't have that option.
Well, yeah, but dual power supply equipment comes with a price tag, and depending on your application, it's not a good business practice. I get why you would do it, but me personally, in certain mission critical, I'd rather have a separate backup, fully the same setup, and go, okay, I lose one, I got the other, I go to it. Dual power supplies are great, but I've had situations where my dual power supply equipment, when the power supply failed on one side, it took out the other side.
Hey, Chris, we got one more quick segment with Hank Landsberg concerning working from home. And here's one thing that engineers are running up against working from home. I talked to Kevin Bunty from Southeast Ohio about this last week, and I know other people are running into it too. We've got pretty good internet at our broadcast facilities, and some people at home are fortunate to have really good, reliable cable service, or maybe not reliable cable service. They have fiber. I've got fiber here now, and it's been wonderful, but not everybody has that. Some people still have DSL, or some people are in a neighborhood with fiber, and it doesn't work so well. Well, how do you get them on the air reliably? Right here's your answer. It's the Max Connect wireless service from Josh Bone at Bone Broadcast. This can save your bacon at transmitter sites and at, let's say you got some high-priced talent. Yeah, high-priced talent that cheaps out and gets the bad DSL from the phone company, and it's not adequate to get their voice and remote control to the radio station when they're sheltering in place at home. Well, Josh Bone has these in stock, ready to go. You can get it on Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, T-Mobile. I guess they're the same now, or gonna be soon. And this will get you reliable 5 megabit up and down data from anywhere where there's a reliable 4G signal. And this works in so many places. Chris Tobin has experienced this. We've done plenty of remotes from this. One time our whole internet was out at the radio station in Cleveland, Mississippi after a horrible tornado came through, and this saved our bacon. It got all of our liners back on the air. John Tesh, Big Boy, all the stuff that we normally air on those stations there. This did it. And you get, this is not just a Cradle Point data modem, but I mean, it is, but the service that you're getting is prioritized. You get a higher priority of data service than anybody else except first responders. So you get great data from just about anywhere where there's a 4G signal. Check it out, maxconnectwireless.com. Really appreciate Josh Bone and his service. Chris and I both have these, and they work just terrifically. That's spelled funny. Take note, maxconnectwireless.com. And these are becoming really popular among broadcasters in the U.S. Chris and I will be right back with a final thought in just a minute. We're back in the Nashville SBE 103 meeting with Hank Landsberg. I'm Kirk Harnack. And by the way, I need to mention, I want to thank my friends at the Telos Alliance for providing this paid Zoom account for us to have this meeting. Thanks very much to Telos Alliance for allowing us to use that. So with the coronavirus and people sheltering in place and all the social distancing, obviously a lot of talent are working from their homes, both in the radio and the TV business. Hank, you make a lot of different boxes and audio things. We think of using them around the studio at the radio station, sometimes out on sports remotes. What has gone up in popularity with people working from home?
Well, last couple of weeks, we've seen a pretty considerable surge in people using these sports pods. These are normally used as an announcer's sort of mini console for doing live coverage of sporting events, and but they also work really well for doing a show from home where you've got a single mic and a guy wearing headphones, and he needs to be able to control his mic, turn it on, off, have a cough button. The other thing that SportsPod does is there we go. Oops. You're back. Looking for the picture. It's there somewhere. Anyway, the other thing that SportsPod does is, there we go, has a headphone mixer that lets you mix two sources of audio in the talent headphones. Usually one is your program or your own mic, and when you're using this remotely, the second input is used for IFB. If you're using SportsPod with a standard two-channel stereo codec, you can use channel one for your program audio, which is just your mic, and the second channel can be used for talkback. So you're able to create a duplex intercom between the guy at home and the guy in the studio. So, sports pods have, we've been shipping a lot of sports pods for people that are doing exactly that, doing their shows from home. They're able to get their mic audio back to the studio, and somebody does the mix there. And, there we go. Now that's the backside of it. So you plug your mic in to one of the XLRs, and you get line-level mic audio out of the other one. And over on the left side, you have two quarter-inch input jacks. That's for your two headphone audio sources. One can be your own mic, and the return can be IFB. If you have more than one person doing a show, if you've got a couple of people, you can use a sports pod for each one, link them together with the RJ45 connector, and that will take power and headphone audio and distribute it to both units at the same time. It uses the radio system's protocol for analog balanced audio between the two. So there we go. So yeah, sports pods work really well if you find yourself in a situation where you have to set up somebody with a small studio at home on a moment's notice. Basically a sports pod and some kind of a codec, and you're in business.
I find that one of the things that is confusing to talent who are working in a different situation with different software, different workflow, is, again, this thing of forgetting to mute or unmute their mic. And I guess with the sports pod, you've got a lighted button on there. They could leave their app unmuted, right? So their mic is always active on the app.
Right. Yeah, but just leave the app open all the time.
Yeah.
And I didn't bring a power supply to plug one of these in, but yeah, the mic on off button, it lights up. The talkback button lights up. If you hit talkback, it automatically mutes the mic from air, so that your comments going back to the guy at the studio don't go on the air. So yeah, this is essentially a one channel broadcast console in a small box. So, and we have these in stock. So if you need one, just get a hold of whoever you like to buy stuff from. And we've got them in our local stock here, so we can drop ship them same day.
Thanks a lot to Hank Landsberg for sharing these ideas and technologies with us at the Nashville SBE office. And you're going to see a lot more SBE meetings going on this way. Chris Tobin, we're out of time. Any big takeaway from today's show that you want to reiterate or talk about?
The takeaways are, think out of the box. There are solutions out there that you may not think were possible for outside the studio that are, like the sports pod, which is actually a great product. And I actually recommend it to people. Last year, they were doing some offsite stuff for their home podcasts. And they're like, well, this seems like a really big thing. I said, trust me, you're going to like it. And sure enough, they called back and said, you know what? I don't have to worry about remembering to unmute the software.
So yes,
that's a big thing when you think about it. And I'm not disparaging the concept, but you got to remember, if you're an editorial person, right, you're a host, and your focus is on what? Are you focusing on this, the microphone I'm holding in my hand? No, you're focusing on the content you're talking about. The last thing you're going to remember is reaching up to the screen and pressing the button that turns on and off the microphone.
Yeah. Happens to us. You know what happens to me.
Happens all the time. Absolutely. Yeah. But think of workflow. So if you think of the workflow, that box makes sense. It's well worth the investment. And you'd be surprised how quickly you'll be able to do more things. The other takeaway with the power, with UPS, power conditioning is a major issue in broadcast facilities for 20 years. Now more than ever, because I have watched some microprocessor-based equipment, even FPGAs and stuff that are power sensitive, electrical voltage swings, noise. I mean, you could have a voltage swing and the box works just fine. It's the noise that gets in. And once it keeps breaking away at the bit error rates and everything else, the errors start to build up and eventually it crashes. UPS box is great. I think, and I know this would work great for a lot of facilities I've been through. Again, you have a main UPS for your plant. Absolutely great thing to do. You should do that. But you also have a lot of rack space that you can't put on the load, right? The load is just too much for the UPS, and you're like, now what do I do? I've grown out of space. Now you take this little guy with your small localized UPSs, and now you have yourself protected. Okay? Is it the best? Oh, yeah, for that application, it makes total sense. So non-mission critical, still be protected with UPS, and you can still maintain it. Where mission critical sits on a load, it sits on the UPS batteries that do their job. I think it's the best of both worlds. It's the best approach I would use. If I was building a facility or recommending somebody at home or even a small plant, I'd say, look, consider this approach. You can save some money, and you can actually, in the long run, do better. That's what will happen.
Chris, next week we've got another show coming up that is – we're going to be talking, interestingly, about sheltering in place, but still being able to shop and demo 300 different microphones, all from the comfort of your chair. By the way, I was looking at my hand sanitizer today, and you can see I've used a fair amount of. I carry this in the car with me. Guess where it's made? Full circle. It's made in China. See, right there. Made in China. Yeah. And your disinfected wipes.
This is what I carry in my backpack as I'm walking around town, just as a precaution. So far, I have not had to break into it, but it's there if I need it.
Oh, gosh. Hey, we got to go. We got to go. Chris, thanks for your input. I want to thank Hank Landsberg for appearing on our SBE meeting this week. Encourage you to subscribe to This Week in Radio Tech. If you're watching this on the YouTube channel, click that subscribe button, please, and get notified when we publish a new one. Of course, we'd rather you join us live if you can, but we know you're busy a lot of times. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. You get notified there that the show is starting, and we're doing Facebook watch parties, so you get notified there. And, you know, during this whole thing, it can be stressful on us. There's a lot of uncertainty in our world at this time, more than usual. And I just want you to know that, hey, at least in the engineering realm and the realm of being friends and engineers, we're here. And we're going to try to do more shows where we're talking to you and we're bringing you on. We do have shows coming up in April this month about what you're going to miss at NAB and what you did miss it at NAB. So we'll hope to bring you some quality information there. Chris Tobin, thank you for being with us, buddy. Appreciate you joining us from Manhattan. You be safe and be well.
Same to you. And I just want to say, safe to everybody, Wally and Dave of the North, and CCBE members, all the colleagues that I know, I have not talked to in a while. Wish you all the best and make sure your families are safe. And hopefully we'll see you in September.
So good deal. Thanks for the good wishes, and we got to go. Thanks to Suncast for producing our show. Does a great job of keeping us on track. Thanks to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network, where you'll find other terrific podcasts, including What the Tech. Yeah, we'll learn all. That's a good show. You ought to check it out. We got to go. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.